You've built a killer sports podcast. You bring the heat every week, and you have a loyal audience. But when it comes to monetizing, you're still leaving too much on the table. That's where the Odyssey Creator Lab comes in. We host your show for free. No fees, no catch. You focus on delivering the play-by-play and hot takes, and our experienced sales team goes to work bringing in ad dollars. Let's turn those downloads into revenue. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and start making money from your podcast.
7 o'clock hour. Welcome back to After Hours. Jay Binkley, Jake Mustard, producing the operation. Got the NBA and the NHL going tonight. Panthers and Hurricanes tonight. The Florida Panthers lead 1-0 in that series. Of course, they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. And as far as the NBA, you had a blowout in game one between the Thunder and T-Wolves. But tonight, OKC with a 1-0 lead over the T-Wolves. And that game will be about 7:30 tonight. You watch any of the NHL or NBA, Jacob? You interested in it?
I can't say I'm interested in the NHL. I try to pay attention when it comes to the playoffs. However, I did get to see the exciting game last night with a Tyrese Halliburton masterclass.
Oh, come back winning at the end? Yeah. Knicks have had some interesting ones. Like the Celtics blowing a couple of those games last round, and of course the Knicks blowing one last night to Indianapolis.
Well, and so there have been four games in NBA playoff history that have, like, in the playoffs where a team has been up 7 or more points with 2 minutes left, or with just about, I think it was under 5 minutes in the fourth quarter, and three out of those four wins were this year's Pacers team.
There's been some exciting games. There's been a lot of blowouts, too. Even the NHL, we've seen blowouts, you know, hockey-type blowouts, 6-2 or 6-1, 5-1 type wins. We've also seen the real close ones, like Game 7 between the Blues and Winnipeg that came down with Winnipeg tying things up with 1.6 seconds left in the game. But it's fun. No Royals baseball tonight there in Minnesota. Going to be a great weekend in Minnesota. You get to see Bubic. He's been destroying everything on Sunday. Noah Cameron from St. Joe, he goes out and pitches tomorrow night for the Royals. The Royals on a day off today before settling in for Minnesota for three, then coming back and playing Cincinnati, the Reds, and then playing the Tigers for three at home, which the Tigers sit ahead of the Royals, sit with more wins than anybody in the American League, followed by the Yankees, followed by the Kansas City Royals. Team that can't score runs, but they can pitch. We'll get more into those later. But Judy Batista had an interesting article out on NFL.com. I brought up this number a few days ago. It's why I don't go wins and losses with teams. And you see it all the time. Who's got a good schedule and who's got a bad schedule? Because you don't know. It's the NFL. Listen to these numbers. At least one team has won its division the season after missing the playoffs entirely in 53 of 55 seasons since the AFL-NFL merger in 1970. So you can look at the schedule and say, oh, they missed the playoffs. It's going to be a bad team. Well, they turn out and they won the division the next year in 53 out of 55 years. Can't count on that, can you, when you do your W's and L's? Also, teams have gone worse to first, winning the division the season after finishing last or tied for last in 20 of the last 23 years. So not just making the playoffs like 53 of 55, but actually winning the division in 20 of the last 23 years. No team did it in 2024. That was the first time since 2019. But they've gone and they've ranked the most vulnerable. And I clearly expected to see the Chiefs on here. But she did her homework. The most vulnerable they had was the Detroit Lions, the NFC North, because that's going to be tough. Green Bay is clearly on the up. Minnesota, I'm curious about that. Very curious to see what Minnesota does this year. I don't know if they can quite have the year they had last year. Definitely going to be a quarterback change. Can J.J. McCarthy, you know, carry the Vikings through? But so I'm not so sure it's going to be the Vikings. The Packers, I could see winning it. The Baltimore Ravens, because you got Cincinnati on their heels. The Philadelphia Eagles, it is surprising to see them as third of the Super Bowl champions. They were tough as nails to beat, and I don't think a lot of people gave them credit throughout the playoffs and the season, but that's like, man, look at this defense, and look at that running attack, and they're going to be tough to beat. They turned out to be tough to beat as they won the whole damn thing, but the Washington Commanders have spent a ton on their offensive line. They brought in different weapons for Jaden Daniels, and he's a special quarterback, so it's going to be interesting. They have the Rams at four, the Texans at five, the Bucs at six, and there's the Chiefs. seventh most vulnerable division titles. There's eight divisions in football. Buffalo Bills are number eight, so they're the clearest path, according to her, as far as winning the division. I can't argue with that. I don't think the Patriots, I think they're an improved team and will be an improved team with Mike Vrabel, but I don't think they're yet ready for primetime. I don't see the Bills stepping and winning a division. I definitely don't see the Jets winning a division. So I say the Buffalo Bills are probably safe at this point until your Patriots, Jacob, are ready to roll. But you would even agree the team's not ready for primetime yet.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to, like you were talking about earlier with the primetime games, you don't want to put a team on there that's not ready because we had that a couple years ago, and there were, I think it was what, the Thursday night games or Monday night games that were always boring or always seemed to be pretty bad.
So we'll see. I don't think they're quite ready for primetime. Would I be surprised if they make the playoffs? Wouldn't be surprised at all. But this is what Judy had to say about the Chiefs. Said the Chiefs have won their division a staggering 9 seasons in a row. That's certainly impressive because you think about windows closing and opening in the NFL so quickly, but winning it 9 straight times, that's tough to do with everybody in your division supposedly going out to beat you. We've seen coaching changes. We've certainly seen quarterback changes in the AFC West. But then again, we're sitting here seeing two other football teams, three of the four teams in the division actually made the postseason last year, all but the Raiders. Because Chargers made it, the Broncos made it, and of course the Chiefs made it. But 9 straight years, they've won the division. The record is 11, and that's the Patriots. So the Chiefs are closing in on that. Last year, they won the division by 4 games. So why are they not the least vulnerable, says Judy? Well, bluntly, the other teams in the AFC West appear to be more of a challenge than the teams in the AFC East. The Chargers and Broncos both made the playoffs last season as wild cards. Los Angeles, after a significant turnaround under Jim Harbaugh, in Denver with a successful rookie campaign of Bo Nix. The Raiders now have Pete Carroll, and they brought in quarterback Geno Smith. So certainly that's going to be a better team, not a challenge division type team, but they'll be better than what they were, to be honest with you. But she says, I can't pick against a team that features Andy Reid, Steve Spagnuolo, and Patrick Mahomes. Maybe the Chiefs will wind up with a few more losses than they had last season because the division games should be much tougher. But 4 games is still a wide margin. As long as Mahomes is upright, the Chiefs will cast a long shadow. Remember, Mahomes is 19-1 on the road in this division. They're, 24-4 in the division at home? Yes, teams line up and beat the Chiefs from time to time. Again, Denver beat them last year, the final game of the year. Mahomes didn't play. The starters didn't play. Denver went out and rolled a bunch of the Chiefs' backups. Do I expect Denver to be a good team? Because people ask all the time, who's going to challenge the Chiefs of the division? At this point, I think the Broncos are the second best team in the division. And it's tough because I think they're really close with the Chargers. I think the Raiders are definitely bringing up the back. Would you say that Denver would be your second best team in this division? Because I'm looking at that defense. That defense is nasty.
Yeah, I mean, the obvious choice is going to be the Chargers. Just because they have Justin Herbert, the most proven in the division besides Patrick Mahomes.
Most proven, but, I mean, except for playoffs.
But yeah, I mean, Bo Nix, he looked great last year.
And they lost playoff game too, so yeah.
You got Geno Smith coming over to the Raiders. It's a fine quarterback talent in the conference.
They are. When you look at, who would you say right now if I said, name me the second best coach in the AFC West? Maybe you don't think Andy Reid's the best coach. Maybe you don't. I do, but... Do you consider him the best coach?
Yeah, I would say just his scheme-wise, okay. He's better scheme than pretty much any other head coach in the division.
So who's the next best head coach? Would you say it's Sean Payton? Would you say it's Pete Carroll? Because keep this in mind, Pete Carroll has won 2 at the college level, won a Super Bowl, and barely lost another Super Bowl when he decided to throw it on the one instead of handing Marshawn Lynch, cost him another Super Bowl victory. And then, of course, you have Jim Harbaugh that's never won at the pro level. He's won at the college level.
I mean, we benefited. My team benefited from the Pete Carroll, so, you know, I'll always thank him for that blunder. But, you know, I think Harbaugh, I know he doesn't have the success in the pro, like the championships, but he's had enough success in the regular season and making it to a Super Bowl. And it's one where, you know, you hope that he can translate it again, and he's kind of doing what he built at college. He's building that team in the pros. Maybe he found a success format there, and now he's going to bring and see how it does in the NFL.
And the one thing about it is, I mean, I do like Denver's draft in the first round. I think it really slipped down the line. R.J. Harvey in the second round, that was still a good pick, the running back out of Central Florida. But Jahdae Barron, the corner from Texas to win the first round when other teams were concentrating on running backs, like Austin Jeanty with the Raiders and Marion Hampton with the Chargers, even though they go out and sign Najee Harris in the offseason as a free agent, got to throw the ball. I'm sorry, but these running backs aren't going to beat the Chiefs. Chiefs did not allow a 100-yard rusher last year. Even Saquon Barkley didn't get 100 yards against them in the Super Bowl. Yeah, they did give up a 100-yard rusher. Lamar Jackson had 122 against the Ravens at the beginning of the season last year. That was it. So it wasn't a running back, but a quarterback did get him. So Lamar did get him. But as far as running backs, they didn't. The Chiefs kept them under 100 yards. They just did. But Barron to the Broncos with already a good defense last year, put him on the opposite side of Pat Surtain. This is how you beat the Chiefs. You want to beat the Chiefs? It's about putting pressure on the quarterback like the Eagles did in the Super Bowl, and it's having a defense with good corners that can slow down Mahomes. This is what you want to do. And the Broncos went with that pattern in the NFL draft when the other teams went running backs. Yeah, if they want to play the game of ball control and keep away and get first downs, keep the offense on the field and keep Mahomes over on the sideline. Or you could see the Mahomes of a couple years ago when it didn't matter how much he played because he was 3 years in a row, they were most points per drive in the NFL. They maximized his time on the field because they didn't have a ton, because, but the defense has gotten better and better, and it's gotten better at stopping the run. Hopefully they can get back to getting to the quarterback because they slipped to 18th last year. They were second in the NFL the two previous years, which they actually won Super Bowls in. The year they didn't, they had slipped to 18th, so they, with Gelati coming in, hopefully he can get better at the pass rush, what they want to get to the quarterback better because it'll help things. But again, I look at these teams and think, all right, who really drafted to help themselves against the Chiefs and help themselves winning the division? And I can't look at Austin Jeanty and Amarian Hampton as guys that will win the division for the Chargers and the Raiders respectively. I don't think the Raiders are going to win anyway, even though I really like Pete Carroll as the head coach. Listen, he's 72 years old. He's not doing this just for fun. He wants to go out there and win. And he's got a quarterback in Geno Smith. We can laugh all we want about Geno Smith. And is that really the answer in the AFC West? Is he the worst quarterback in the AFC West? Maybe. Bo Nix might be too. I mean, we'll see what Bo Nix does in year two. We certainly saw regression from CJ Stroud from the first year to year two. We'll see what Bo Nix does this year. But Geno did lead the NFL in accuracy 2 years ago. So he does have that going for him. He is an accurate quarterback and what he can do. But I look at some of these moves and I think, okay, I'll go with the Broncos as far as making a better move to try to slow Patrick Mahomes down. But until the Chiefs don't win it, it's tough to pick against them, but people continuously pick against the Chiefs. It's gotten ad nauseum now. They really have become the NFL villains to some extent. And, you know, it's not stopping. It is not stopping whatsoever. Thought it would slow down a little bit this summer, but it's not. Explain that next.
Life can feel overwhelming, but on my podcast, From the Heart with Rachel Braithen, we're in it together. Every Friday, a new episode brings you a new story with topics on motherhood, wellness, self-love, and more. Listen to From the Heart with Rachel Braithen wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to After Hours, Jay Binkley, Jacob Muster producing the operation. Got a text here, 913-586-7965, Jay Southland Tow Service text line. Dan and KCK says CBS Sports says the Dolphins will be 6-11. He thinks they could challenge the Bills. I don't think so, man. Bills won that division by 5 games last year. Do I think New England's will finish second? I do. The Dolphins just never took that step, man. You know, they made the postseason for a couple of years there. You know, Tyreek Hill and stuff, they came to Kansas City a couple years ago when it was really cold, like 31 degrees wind chill, minus 31. It was colder than hell 2 years ago. Didn't win. But you know what? They didn't take care of business at home against the Bills, or they could have been playing in Miami and not in cold Kansas City. Last year, I think, was a step back. They're just a mess, man. I just don't buy into what the Dolphins are doing.
Sorry. I mean, it literally seems like it comes down to if Tua's healthy or not, they'll be competitive. If Tua is not healthy and dealing with concussions or in rib issues or whatever shoulder separation that he had, you know, that just tanks their season because they don't have a relevant backup quarterback. It would have been great for them to go sign Jameis Winston this year. I know Jameis isn't the best player, but he's a great backup to have. And since you have a injury prone quarterback, and to try and keep Tyreek Hill happy and all this other stuff. But, you know, the other thing I told Logan that kind of goes with your point, the Patriots last year favored in zero games. This year they're favored in 11 because of their strength of schedule for how bad they finished and some of the improvements.
So the Bills are favored.
They could easily
one.
Finish second in the division. It's just how if they – it's – can they split the Bills and can they split games with the Dolphins or take those series because we're talking baseball, but you know, split that conference matchups.
And we'll talk baseball here at 7:30 with Jim Callis, who was on Cody and Gold about Jack Caglione, the Omaha Storm Chasers, be playing here in just a little bit. Keep you updated on what he's doing in AAA. But as far as the AFC East, I just still see it, Bills. I mean, I do agree with Judy. They're least vulnerable. The Chiefs are seventh out of the eight, which is, okay, you got to put them somewhere, right? The Bills, I think they have an easier run. Again, three teams in the AFC West made the postseason last year. And Denver's got a head coach that's won a ring. Oakland or L.A., Vegas has a team with the ring. And then there's the Chargers that have had three coaches with Justin Herbert, but I think he's finally got the coach he needs in Jim Harbaugh. Being a former NFL quarterback, I think that bodes well. And they're working on that offensive line. They drafted a whole last season ago. They put a right tackle instead of left tackle, which that's working out for them. That offensive line getting better and better. They want a dominant running game, take pressure off Justin Herbert. So if that's the way they want to win, fine. That's the way they're going to have to win is going to be a running game because J.K. Dobbins doesn't even have a home yet, even though he's tendered by the Chargers. Because they want to pick if he goes and signs anywhere else. But Najee Harris and obviously Hampton will get the bulk of the running with the Chargers. The Chiefs are going to be interesting this year because early on you saw Mahomes. It was Texas Tech Mahomes, meaning score a touchdown every time he came on the field. I mean, the year he won MVP, he had to score a touchdown every time he was out there because the defense was giving him one up every time he was out there. And then defense got better. And, you know, everybody's talking about being a defensive team, the last Super Bowl title run that they had, but they actually played some of the best defense in the league, but yet still ended up going to the Super Bowl. So you could make an argument that that was the best playoff run we've ever seen, and I would agree with that because you think about you know who they played offensively and defensively as far as scoring points. That was unbelievable. I'm talking about that 2023-24 playoff run. They played Miami, Frisco, Baltimore, and the Bills in the playoffs. That was number two, number three, number four, number six scoring offenses. And defensively, they played number one, three, and four best defenses. The only one they didn't play was number two because that was the Chiefs. Baltimore was the number one defense. San Francisco was number three. Buffalo was number four that season. And the Chiefs, albeit we like to talk about them not scoring points, well, they beat the number one, three, and four, didn't get to play two because they are number two. But they beat the best of the best. That was a great playoff run. Find me a better playoff run than what the Chiefs had a couple years ago. You got to forget about what happened during the season because it wasn't that great. Remember Christmas Day, they lose the Raiders at home and the sky's falling. They beat a burrowless Bengals team the week after and that kind of saved the season going forward. But they ended up getting to the playoffs and playing the best of the best, best scoring offense, best scoring defenses in the NFL, and they still won a Super Bowl. And I'm curious what kind of team we're going to see this year. Because I do believe the Chiefs wanted to be more wide open. That's all I talked about last year at training camp with Reed and Mahomes as far as throwing the ball downfield. It was a healthy Hollywood Brown who then was hurt the first game of the preseason against the Jags. Then Rashee Rice got hurt early on against the Chargers in that game. Then, boom, Xavier Worthy, a rookie, step up. So they weren't able to be the team that we thought that they would be. They had to totally shift. And I think when you look back in the history of it, and you think about what Andy Reid and the offense did, just able to muster enough points to actually get to the Super Bowl, become AFC champions. They got rolled by Philly. No question about that, but they still got to the Super Bowl. They're still AFC champions. Still the team to beat, to be honest with you. And that was a team that not a lot of expectations when you lose your top two receivers basically for the year. Yeah, Hollywood came back at the end, had a cup of coffee, had nine catches for the team, but St. Joe, they were wide open. It was Hollywood Brown going deep and scoring a touchdown all the time, Worthy, you name it. You're going to see a different Worthy this year. Worthy's production is going to be even up because he got better and better as the season progressed. Early on, he was asked to do a lot of things. We'll hear from Jim Callis here in a little bit about the expectations on Jack Caglione, because I think he's going to have unreal expectations when he gets to Kansas City. But Xavier Worthy being a first-round pick, there's always a little bit of pressure that comes with that. I do think having Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice kind of took a lot of that pressure off Worthy, being a first-round pick. But when they were hurt, he had to step up and be the dude. And he did, because he got better and better as the season progressed. And we got to the postseason. He led the Chiefs in postseason yards and catches. That's not even counting the Super Bowl, where he was fantastic in garbage time against the Eagles. He's going to be asked to step up this year. But I am curious. This could be a more wide-open offense. You know, will Rashard get a lot of the carries for the Kansas City Chiefs? Will he still go Kareem Hunt, short yardage? I think they will. What's Isaiah Pacheco's disposition going to be this year? He was hurt last year, so really didn't, even when he came back, wasn't the same running back you thought you had. And Isaiah Pacheco, they bring in Elijah Mitchell, too, with this running game. But with Rashard, he can catch the ball out of backfield. He's a former receiver at Miami. That's why they drafted him out of SMU, but it's seventh-round back, so you get what you get. But I am curious how it works out. And I am curious to see a healthy group of receivers in Brown, in Rice, in Worthy. Then you throw in Jalen Royals into the equation. Yeah, Juju's coming back and all that, but not expecting much from Juju. Expecting more from the rookie, to be quite honest with you. But I'm curious. And then Rice, what's the suspension going to be? Because it probably is going to come with the Chiefs. Then they'll be down to Worthy and Brown and Jalen Royals and Juju. But what are they going to do? With having everybody healthy, is it going to be a new-look Chiefs offense? And then you always have to count on injuries. Collywood never plays 17 games. Never does. He's always hurt. He missed, what, 5 games his last 2 years in Arizona? He's always hurt. It is an injury risk with Hollywood Brown, so you can't always say, oh, he's going to stay healthy. Well, you can't always count on that. That's why I would have just bulked up all the Chiefs at wide receivers, because last year, all of a sudden, you got in a situation where you didn't have Brown, you didn't have Rice, and it's like, oh, no, what do we do? Well, you got to draft receiver talent, and I'm 100% staying with that. The Chiefs need wide receiver talent. I know on paper they look fine, but are they really fine? Did you really feel comfortable with Chiefs wide receivers last year when all those guys were hurt? I don't think you were. Anyway, we come back. Jim Callis from MLB Pipeline, who does all these prospects and really looks at these prospects. And we know that J.J. Piccolo compared Jack Caglione to Pete Alonso. Well, Jim Callis makes an outlandish comparison, and we'll hear that next.
I want to tell you about a new podcast from Odyssey called Family Lore. It's about interesting family stories and the truth behind them. It's available now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your shows.
Welcome back to After Hours, Jay Binkley with you. Jacob Mustard producing the operation. Jack is not hit yet. Caglione is not hit yet. He's betting third tonight is the Storm Chasers about to start off against the Salt Lake Bees, the AAA affiliate of the Angels. Keep you updated on what he's doing. But anyway, J.J. Piccolo obviously made an interesting comparison to Cags. What does Jim Callis think? He's the MLB Pipeline writer, senior writer there. He's all over the prospects in minor league baseball. He watches them inside and out. This was his impression when he joined Quiddy and Gold today as far as Jack Caglione. And he also makes an interesting comparison.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's – I mean, and this is a good thing. I think he's exactly what the Royals thought they were getting when they took him sixth overall in the draft. I don't think they thought he was going to get there. I think they did benefit. There were seven or eight players who all would have probably been the number one pick in this year's draft if they were available this year. And it was a deep draft at the top last year, and the Royals benefited by having Cags kind of fall in their lap at six. But, I mean, he's exactly what we thought he was. I mean, he's got probably as much usable power as anybody in the minor leagues. He's, you know, shown that so far this year. The only question I think you have – well, there's two questions about him, and one is minor. The first question is, what position does he play when he gets to Kansas City? Because they have Vinny Pascantino at first. Salvador Perez spends a lot of time at DH. So I think, you know, that's why we're seeing him play the outfield. And you know, is he going to – I think he moves well enough. He's athletic enough to be a decent outfielder. He hasn't played there a lot. But I almost think that's almost the most important part of his development in AAA right now is getting reps in the outfield. And then, two, the one quibble you'd have with his offensive game is he chases a lot of pitches. He chased like Florida. But I remember talking to some scouts where normally that would alarm you. you know, he's so big. He covers so much of the plate and off the plate. You maybe chase matters a little bit less with Jack. And he's still chasing, I think, at a pretty aggressive rate. I think it's above, I think it's around 35% the last time I checked. Maybe it's closer to 33. And that's still excessive, but he does so much damage, and he doesn't strike. It's not like he's striking out a ton, even with all that chase. He still makes a decent amount of contact, and he's strong enough that he can hit the ball out even when he doesn't barrel the ball up perfectly. So yeah, we had him on our podcast, on our Pipeline podcast last week. And he said, I mean, that he's discussed it with the organization, and that's kind of the focal point of his offensive development is, you know, trying to chase less, but without taking away from him who he is. So there's a long answer for
yeah.
you.
When you look at, like, major league comps, who, you know, I'll give you who JJ said a minute ago, but, like, power-wise, who's the guy in the pros that, like, his power most closely relates to or has come up recently that relates to? Because we know it's big power.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could put him up there with just about anybody in the big leagues. I mean, I'm not trying to say we're not putting him in the Hall of Fame, but I mean, he's like a slightly bigger version to me. I don't think he's as polished a hitter, but until, if we're just talking the power, he's like a slightly bigger version of Shohei. And I know I was the one I kind of.
He also pitched, you know, so great.
He did, and it's funny. Like, I didn't like the tag. I don't think anybody should be compared to Shohei as a two-way guy. And, like, right. I think the Royals also did what was smart. You know, I remember arguing with it with Greg Amsinger good-naturedly at the MLB Network desk during the draft last year. I would not have had him pitch as a pro either. I mean, it's interesting and intriguing, but his ceiling's so high. I want him devoting 100% of his time to being the best offensive player he could be, because that could be a 40-plus home run guy. But, like, I don't know, just the size and his ability to hammer pitches all over the place, out of the park, even if he doesn't square it up, it kind of reminds me of Shohei, to be honest.
We had J.J. Piccolo on our show a couple days ago, and he's like, hey, I'm not saying he's going to be this player, but the comp it reminded him of, or who it reminded him of, was Pete Alonso. That's the name he threw out there.
Yeah, you know, I mean, and that's interesting. You know, Pete's, you know, they're both Florida Gators. I think we're talking offensively, so I get it. I mean, he's obviously a left-handed hitter. You know, I think he's a better hitter than Pete. I mean, I'll go along with the power, but I think he's a better hitter and a better athlete than Pete Alonso. So I guess I'm saying that he's,
wow.
I think he probably winds up being better than Pete Alonso, or at least has, if I had to guess, I would say, and I really like Pete Alonso. I think he's probably going to be a better player than Pete Alonso when all is said and done.
What do you think that the reasonable timeline is of games that you would expect for following prospects to kind of get a handle on right field before he'd be comfortable? They obviously already admitted he's on the earliest end of their timeline just to getting to AAA. The Royals have tried to openly say they're taking their time with him. But, like, how many games do you think make sense in AAA to get comfortable in the position, to get more reps out there?
Yeah, I think it depends on the guy. I mean, you know, he's buying in, like, he buys in, he understands that's probably the quickest way, you know, because rather than move past Contino to DH and move guys around, you know, they aren't getting a ton of production out of a lot of their outfielders. And that's probably the easiest way to get him up there. I don't know if there's a set number. And I think it's one of those things, the better the bat looks, the more forgiving you are with the defense. So if he hits in AAA, like he did in Double A, I mean, he spent, you know, essentially, you know, a little more than 5 weeks in Double A, and he hit 320 with 9 homers. If he hits like that in Triple A, if he hits that well, I have a hard time imagining that he wouldn't be up by the end of June. Because, again, you don't have to play him in the outfield every day. You could occasionally play him at first. You know, the days where Salvador Perez is behind the plate, then you put Pascatino at DH and Cags can play first. You're not asking him to go out and play every day in right field and be a Gold Glover. You know, it might be, you know, it might be half and half. And again, I think the bat will dictate when the glove is ready, if that makes sense.
We're talking to Jim Callis, senior writer for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com. Does great work covering the minor leagues, and you obviously see his work around the draft quite a bit. Where's the Royals organization kind of stack up now from their farm system, at least in baseball? We know it was fairly depleted a couple years ago. Where does it stand now?
Yeah, you know, it's on the rise a little bit. We ranked 23rd coming into the season, and I'll be honest, I haven't kept up. Like, those things almost change daily as guys graduate to the big leagues and that type of thing.
Sure.
They're probably around 20th. You know, I mean, you obviously have the premier power prospect in baseball, Jack Caglione. They have one of the best tandems of catching prospects around in Blake Mitchell, who's been hurt, and Carter Jensen. I think the key for them is that they'd like to develop some pitching. Ben Cadorna has struggled a little bit. Noah Cameron has looked really good in a couple starts up in Kansas City. So it's not as deep as it once was, but there are some interesting guys. And, you know, the one thing they won't have this year is they won't have the benefit of picking up near the top of the draft. But the thing about this draft is it's the opposite of last year. It's not top heavy at all. And I really don't think the player that they get at 23 is going to be that much different than the guy who might go 10 or 15 spots ahead of that. Plus, they get the bonus pick for Bobby Witt finishing in the top three in the MVP voting last year, and because they gave him a full year of service time 2 years ago. So they will have some money to play with, even though they're not picking as high as they used to.
We talk about the Royals organization as one that I used to really complain, Jim, about the way they develop pitching, and I didn't think it was very impressive. Now they've taken a lot of different avenues in the big leagues where they've found some guys they drafted a few years ago, found some guys they've traded for in free agency. Does Major League Baseball, I guess, scouts or teams who look at this, do they value what the Royals do pitching development-wise more than they did in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's constantly evolving. I mean, I think not just the Royals, but if you looked at almost any team, I feel like the knowledge of pitching has increased so much compared to 5 years ago, and then 5 years ago compared to 10 years ago. So I think everybody's doing better. I mean, the tricky thing with pitching is it's like a catch-22. Like, pitchers are so volatile. You know, you used to have, I think it was Baseball Prospectus, had the expression, there's no such thing as a pitching prospect. Well, if you take that attitude, that's the best way to never have any pitchers. But you just have to accept that, you're going to take some guys and you might invest in some first-round picks or some second-round picks, and they're not all going to pan out. I mean, it was probably 10 years ago, I think the Royals spent 2 first-round picks on high school pitchers. And Ash Russell and Nolan Watson never really got off the ground. And, you know, Ash Russell developed the yips. And, you know, like, you can't see that coming. And it's just, you know, Chris Bubich, you know, the guy they drafted, they traded for Lorenzen. Noah Cameron was a lower pick. Michael Wacha was a free agent. Seth Lugo was a free agent. Cole Reagans was a really astute trade. You just kind of have to, accumulate as much pitching as you can and hope it works out. So to answer your question, yes, I do think the Royals are doing a better job. And I also think, not to make excuses for anybody, that even the best pitching organizations run into a lot of injuries and pitfalls along the way, just because that's the nature of pitching. I mean, I think the Dodgers are one of the best organizations in baseball at developing pitching. And look, I mean, what do they have? 14 pitchers on their big league injured list right now? It's just, you need some luck to go along with the skill, I guess, is what I'm saying.
Last one for you. I'll just ask you at the big league level what you're seeing in the American League Central. You know, it's not long ago where everybody thought you get to like 85 wins and you should be good to go. This is 2 years in a row where this Central looks like you're going to have 3 teams, maybe 4, in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, it's not. I mean, I think if the season ended today, they would get all 3 wild cards, right?
Yeah, believe right. That's right. Yeah,
like they have 4 playoff teams, which I don't think people saw coming. And it's just, I think, whether we're talking about the Royals, the Tigers, very similar, the Guardians, the Twins, all these organizations are kind of, none of them are big budget teams. They're all kind of, mid-level budgets, and they've all done a good job in recent years of developing players and making some astute trades. And I don't know that they're like the juggernauts that say the Phillies and Mets and Braves are, but I do think AL Central is probably the most fun division to watch in baseball because, everybody but the White Sox has a chance to win that division, and if they don't win the division, to make the playoffs. They're all very interesting teams.
Jim Callis, senior writer for MLB Pipeline, MLB.com. Appreciate the insight. Great to have you on the show, and we'll have to have you on here in another month or so around the draft.
Yeah, that would be great. Good talking to you guys.
Jim Callis with a very interesting comparison to Kegs, and we'll get into that, obviously, coming up next. But Kegs, by the way, Kegs watch, 0-for-1 tonight. He popped out in Salt Lake, his first bed bat. They're playing tonight. The Storm Chasers are. He's playing right field tonight. So that's the Kegs watch tonight. He popped out. But the Royals do have a few prospects in the top 100. Kegs is 10th. Blake Mitchell, the catcher, is 42. Carter Jensen out of Park Hill High School, the catcher, is 88 as far as MLB top 100. That's Jim Callis, who joined Cody and Gold today. Full interview on demand at Odyssey.com. But come up next, the comparison that he made. Let's just slow down just a little bit, Jim. We'll discuss that next. And welcome back to After Hours with JP Inkley. Jacob Mustard boots in the operation. You just heard from Jim Callis about Cags, who's 0-for-1 tonight in Salt Lake with a pop out, but the comparison game continues. Hey, it's tough. I know people in sports radio media like make comparisons. Oh, someone reminds me of so and so. People tried it forever with Patrick Mahomes, and all of a sudden you become good, you become a main guy, and then all of a sudden people start comparing you to you. Who can be the next Mahomes? Because you certainly heard this during the NFL draft. But these teams do, as much as they're to their chagrin, these teams make comps. So it happens in the front office. Don't forget it was JJ who made this comp of Cags just this week on Cody and Gold.
Yeah, I mean, Adam Dunn, I can see because of the power, but Jack is going to be a more complete hitter than Adam. Adam struck out a lot. I mean, very good major league player. I think Cags is going to be able to control the zone better than that. You know, honestly, like what we hope he develops into, and I'm not saying this is who he is. This is what we would like to see is some version of a Pete Alonso. I mean, that's, you know, a left-handed version of Pete Alonso. Pete makes a lot of good plate decision or pitch decisions. He's got massive power. You know, he's turned himself into a pretty good defender at first base. I mean, and coincidentally, those two went to the same high school, you know, so it's kind of weird. You know, that would be excellent for us, you know, and really, you know, the thing we don't want Jack to do is to try to be anybody but himself. I know that the comp game, we do it in the scouting world all the time, and it's just part of it. But Jack needs to be himself, you know, whatever version that of Jack that it allows him to be the best major league player he can be. That's what we'd be happy with that.
So they do comparisons in the front office as well, but be the best player that you can be. Don't put the pressure on him. Easier said than done, because everybody's always making the comparisons. Pete Alonso was the Royals comparison to one Jack Caglione. And the Adam Dunn, a big donkey, huge fan of that. So if you can have that kind of power, that'd be awesome to get the power of one Adam Dunn. But here was Jim Callis, that comparison that he made, and this is where it gets a little crazy. By the way, Pete Alonso, you can see July 11th, right before the All-Star break, the Royals play the Mets here at Kauffman Stadium, so you get to see Pete Alonso, the polar bear, up close. Then that's the comparison to Cags, so be it. But anyway, that's what the Royals had said. But here was Jim Callis' comparison to Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could put him up there with just about anybody in the big leagues. I mean, I'm not trying to say we're not putting him in the Hall of Fame, but I mean, he's like a slightly bigger version to me. I don't think he's as polished a hitter, but if we're just talking the power, he's like a slightly bigger version of Shohei. And I know I was the one I kind of.
He also pitched, you know, so great.
he did, and it's funny. Like, I didn't like the Keg. I don't think anybody should be compared to Shohei as a two-way guy. And, like, right. I think the Royals also did what was smart. You know, I remember arguing with Greg Amstinger good-naturedly at the MLB Network desk during the draft last year. I would not have had him pitch as a pro either. I mean, it's interesting and intriguing, but his ceiling's so high. I want him devoting 100% of his time to being the best offensive player he could be, because that could be a 40-plus home run guy. But, like, I don't know, just the size and his ability to hammer pitches all over the place, out of the park, even if he doesn't square it up, it kind of reminds me of Shohei, to be honest.
All right, so that's what Jim Callis said. So the Royals, it was with Pete Alonso that made more reasonable. But there was Jim, who's, you know, a noted guy. The guy's, you know, senior writer for MLB Pipeline. But Shohei, come on, man. I mean, let's not go there. I mean, it's two-way player, but he's not looking at the pitching aspect of what Cags could do as a pitcher down in Florida, just strictly what he can do at the plate. Shohei's a pretty big dude, too. Cags, bigger dude. But, come on, man, this is a three-time MVP. I mean, I love the comparison. If they have the next Shohei Ohtani, that's great. But, again, these are these unreal expectations put on Cags. And I know as soon as he gets caught up here, everybody's going to be thinking the savior. I'm for team bring up Cags. Because you look at free agency, you look at who they have in the minor leagues. Yes, it's a guy that I think could help the team. Gone over before, played in the SEC. I clearly think that's like playing an A-ball as it is anyway. So it's kind of like playing the minor leagues when you're playing in the SEC. Regardless, he destroyed double A. We know that. Now he's getting his chance in triple A, which we'll see. He's got singles right now so far. It's been a very, very short stint in Omaha, 0-1 tonight. But making comparisons with MVPs, yeah, it sounds great. If they're the next MVP up there, that's great because Bobby Witt Jr. is probably going to have his share of MVPs when it's all said and done. See what Aaron Judge continues to do, but clearly Bobby Witt Jr., special player. Let's not forget about that. But Keg's coming up. I think he's a big part of the future for the Royals. I just hate to see unreal expectations on him because he's not going to be able to escape it. When he gets called up here, which he will be at some point, when he gets called up here, people are going to have unreal expectations. Expect home runs all the time out of Jack. And then if he struggles, it's going to be the Jackson Holiday issue once again, like the Orioles faced, and they sent him back to the minors and then brought him back up. But he was a high school player, not a college player like Jack. Jack, I think, has the mental makeup. Anytime you hear anything from him, the mental makeup of the dude, it's going to be good. I just don't want to see unreal expectations on the guy because clearly he's coming to a team that it's different than other cases. Sure, when Bobby came up, when Hosmer came up, when Moose came up and stuff like that, there weren't the immediate expectations. This team was not ready to go. The Royals were not ready to go. When they brought Bobby up, this team was not ready to go. So he had the advantage of just kind of sitting back, learning the game, and whatever he did, it's kind of gravy, icing on the cake. It didn't matter because the team wasn't ready to compete yet. But Jack would be coming up in a different situation. Jack would be coming up like a lot of guys did when they came up in 15, and the training wheels were off. You were expected go time because you were playing for a competing baseball team, expected to go. Well, if the Royals are hanging around in the wild card like they are now, and three teams from the American League Central, because this is a great division, I think people are sleeping on that. Yes, they beat up on each other and beat up on the White Sox because everybody does. But regardless, they're still beating other teams. The Royals just 2 out of 3 against the Giants. So they do beat other teams. I get it. You look at the Twins record and Royals record against teams above 500. It's not great with the Royals 13-19. Rob ran the numbers earlier. But still, just to put all the expectations on Jack, do I want to see him called up here? Yeah. But then again, got to be cautious. Got to be cautious. Step back. Say, all right, learn the game. But you're going to be expecting things because they don't make a whole bunch of moves in free agency, and it's one of your big moves bringing him up to the Kansas City Royals. People are going to expect big things from Jack, but this put out Shohei Ohtani in these names for Jack, you just hate hearing that. Pete Alonso, yeah, fine, sure, whatever. Just go with that direction because I do think Cags will be that kind of power hitter with this team. But Shohei Ohtani is a different kind of dude, man. But I don't think you can make any comparisons to him. And I get it. He's just hitting now. He's not pitching because he hurt himself. So he's just doing the hitting. And the guy's an incredible pitcher when he's out there. And Jack, I don't think he's going to get the chance to be a pitcher with the Kansas City Royals. Not exactly why they drafted him. But I just say slow down. Like when I heard Ohtani, I just couldn't believe it because this isn't just, you know, any writer from any publication put something out here. He's kind of an established dude, Jim Callis is, with MLB Pipeline. In what they do as far as looking at all the prospects and definitely the draft coverage that they have because he follows these guys, follows them in high school, follows them in college, follows them in the pros and what they can do and definitely follows their progress in the minor leagues and how they can help a team. But to expect big things from Jack, I think just slow down a little bit. Let's not throw out the Shohei Ohtani because he's already going to get that enough from the fan base when he's called up for the Royals. Coming up next, though, a few texts here at 913-586-7965 regarding the Kansas City Chiefs. Plus, I did see an interesting article. Most underrated, underappreciated players from each team. I'll tell you who they picked. I picked somebody completely different. I want to know about yours. 913-586-7965. Who's the most underappreciated Kansas City Chief? We'll discuss that next.
I'm Dr. Harini Bhatt, host of Hidden History. Every Monday, I go where history gets uncomfortable. Banner civilizations, doomsday prophecies, and events that science still can't fully explain. Listen to and follow Hidden History, available now wherever you get your podcasts.